Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. Daniel, nice to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Good. I have you here today for a special reason.
Uh-oh.
You're going to sort out all the factions that are doing the fighting in Syria and Iraq.
Oh, no.
But today, especially in Iraq, we have to help our viewers sort this out. But it's always shifting, but we basically have an idea of who's fighting whom, but it is very complex. Makes no sense. That's why we can't say A is fighting B, and mm-hmm. this is what their beef is. There's a lot of factions. You got to figure it out. And we want to talk about today about the third battle for Fallujah. You know, you'd think two battles would be enough, but maybe they think three's a charm, and maybe this will happen. Of course, a couple years ago, there was a surge and lots of praise, and Bush organized this and sent in a couple extra troops, and the surge won, and we were still in Washington at the time, and a lot of bragging going on, the surge. That's what we needed all the time. But I don't know how much bragging rights they've earned, because we're still in a big mess. And the big issue today and ongoing right now is the a return to a battle to try to take Fallujah away from ISIS. And this is involving a lot of troops. It's a test of the United States policy of giving, advice to the troops, and training, and whether the Iraqi troops will run or hide. And, you can read some articles that will say, well, it's the Iraqi government, the trained troops in the U.S. getting ready to invade. But then you'll come across, which is probably closer to the truth, that the militias, the 30,000 or thousands of people who are ready to go in there and look like they're more determined, they're backed by the Iranians. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple groups that want to get rid of ISIS. But just like in Syria, sometimes the allies get mixed up. So what do you think is going to happen here? Why do you think it's doing that? Do you think they're fighting over who gets to be boss? Because we claim we're on the side of Iran, and yet we're claiming Iran's the problem.
Yeah, it's absolutely confusing in Fallujah, and as you say, the battle is ongoing right now to retake it from ISIS, which took control in 2014. But Fallujah was originally a city of 300,000 people. And as you pointed out, the first two battles were when the U.S. attacked the city. And ironically, the first two things they bombed were two hospitals. And they leveled the city completely. It was in retaliation, if you remember, for the four Blackwater troops who were killed there. And they leveled the city. Thousands and thousands of people were killed. White phosphorus was used. All sorts of horrible weapons were used. Didn't solve the problem. So what it was used to be called the rebels in Iraq, now they're ISIS or whatever you want to call them. They've taken it again. And so the U.S. is in a bind because they say they want to fight ISIS, but the real power in the fight against ISIS in Fallujah are the Iranian-backed militias.
You know, and with the first battle of Fallujah, I remember the discussion going on there and somebody making a military point that Americans never lose military battles. We might lose the peace and we might lose afterwards because we lost Vietnam, but we never lost a military battle. So they were saying that we did actually militarily lose the Fallujah battle the first time, and then later on we go back in and our allies take it over. But that might be, a sign of things to come because we don't know why we go to war. We don't know who our friends are, who our enemies are. We don't do it with declaration. We come across as occupiers, and we're on the wrong side of so many issues that maybe this eventually leads to an inept military, and that is essentially where we are right now. There's not a strategy. We don't know when we're going to have victory. But I saw one neocon on TV the other day spouting the same position that the Saudis have. They said, well, what we need to do is get the foreigners out of here. It's these foreigners that have come in here and getting involved in this battle. And the foreigners, of course, are only designated as the Iranians. Yeah. So, yes, the Iranians are there, but they happen to be next door, and they happen to have been the recipients of a war when we were allies of Saddam Hussein when there was a major war going on for 8 years. So, yes, I think they have some skin in this game.
If only the neocons had been saying that in 2002, keep the foreigners out. But what the U.S. wants in Fallujah and elsewhere, really, is impossible. Because on the one hand, it wants ISIS defeated in Fallujah, but it doesn't want Iran to benefit from the defeat of ISIS in Fallujah. You can't have both. It's really one or the other. And there's a fiction that somehow there'll be some political reconciliation. What really, I think, should bother the U.S. the most, what they really want in Iraq is a Saddam Hussein to take over and to find some way to get these all these groups together again.
Well, in a way, there's some similarities to what goes on in Syria. You know, we pretend that we are adamant opponents of ISIS, and yet the Iranians come in and the Russians come in and they start fighting ISIS, and we don't like that. And then there are other stories come up and say, well, we really aren't against ISIS, you know, in Syria, and who knows what our real policies are, but we're against the official leader. The Assad is the official leader in Syria, but we want him out. And so it becomes mixed. But in this case, we're with Abadi, who is our theoretical leader of Iraq, and therefore we want him. And I guess the Iranians are sort of maybe neutral on that because he's a Shia, and they might not worry about it. But I think it's a struggle, like you say, for control. Who will take the marching orders from the Iranian government or from our CIA and our government by promise of money and all these other things?
Well, I think there is a struggle between the Shia in Iran in Iraq because you have Abadi, who was backed by the U.S. But you also have al-Sadr, who was fighting Abadi, and one of al-Sadr's big beefs is the corruption. So it sounds like Abadi is able to hold on to things by passing out U.S. dollars everywhere. But the irony, as you're right, in Syria is that the U.S. doesn't want Iran to win. In Iraq, it wants it to win, but not really win. It's very confusing. But you know what I've been reading about before we started the show was the depredations, the horrible conditions of people who lived under ISIS occupation for these past couple of years in Fallujah, and just the terrors of living under ISIS. But interestingly enough, when the Russians liberated Palmyra in Syria from ISIS, the U.S. had no praise for it. As a matter of fact, I remember a Pentagon spokesman said, well, for Assad to take it back over is like going from the frying pan into the fire.
Right. But you know, the ideas, I mean, what's going on there should be obvious to the American people if they paid any attention. It should be obvious to our policymaker if they're looking for some type of success because they get nothing. They don't have success ever. And think of the lives lost, the money spent, the chaos. And maybe some of them, you know, there are some of these conspiracy theories that say, yeah, that's what they want. They like chaos. They thrive on chaos. And that's always been hard for me to accept. But maybe there are some that like chaos, and it looks like it isn't very hard to cause the chaos. But this leads me to say, you know, we've argued the case, why go in? We argue vehemently about going into Iraq. So, but now you think with this mess going on, don't you think one day some of them would wake up and say, you know, let's admit the truth. Maybe it is time just to come home. But I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, it's, you know, you brought up the surge earlier. That was supposed to be the big success story in 2007. And you remember neocon after neocon went through the International Relations Committee telling us how fantastic it was. And essentially we were paying the Sunnis to fight against al-Qaeda instead of fight against us. But the real goal of the surge was political reconciliation. And that, of course, never happened. So it was the appearance of a great success, but it wasn't a success, and we see that it's still happening today.
You know, the country was held together by Saddam Hussein, you know, with our assistance at times. Mm-hmm. And he was a dictator, and he was pretty vicious, but compared to now, it was rather calm. But if you did have a situation where we stayed out and the Iranians didn't feel it was in their interest, a situation like this, I think the natural thing would have been to have a division, since I don't think there's going to be a reconciliation between the more authoritarian Shia and the Sunnis. I mean, that looks like that's been ongoing for a long time. But I still think, because there's some of these natural areas right now, there's Sunni areas, there's Shia area, and maybe those, if nobody had been there, maybe those lines would have been more sharply defined and isolated. Same way with the Kurds. Maybe by now the Kurds would have something lined up. But no, it's continuation of the fighting and the killing and the occupation, and energy is a big issue. This idea that oil isn't a big issue, pipelines are a big issue. You know, there's not a shortage of oil right now, but pipelines, they want to have pipelines, and it involves Afghanistan and all. But it's so unsuccessful. It's so miserably bad, and yet they never say, you know, do something else. It always reminds me of the stupidity in our central economic planners and our Federal Reserve. No matter how much chaos they cause, they never say, well, you know, maybe our theory is wrong. Well, I think the theory of this obsession with foreign intervention and occupation against our laws and against morality, there's something wrong with that. And I don't know what it'll take for the American people to wake up other than a total bankruptcy, which is what my prediction has been. I think we'll end up with that before we end up with sanity, you know, in Washington.
And what Washington claims it wants in Iraq is literally impossible. There is a de facto Kurdish state in the north. However, Turkey obviously is very, very opposed to that. So it's de facto happened, but it's not allowed to de jure happen. There's a de facto Shia state aligned with Iran in parts of the south, as you point out, but that can't happen in actuality. Yet you can't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. This is what happens when you completely destroy complex societies. You simply can't reorganize them. And these are the neocons in Washington thought they were the masters of the universe, you know, and they make their own reality, but reality has a way of biting back.
Yeah, and actually what is there is a policy that the neocons strongly support. They say that we have this obligation. Is not just mercantilism. We want the oil and the pipeline. They wouldn't admit that. It's put on a much higher order. It's a moral obligation. I mean, people are getting killed over there. Human rights are being abused, and therefore we, the great nation and the great peacemakers, we have to go over there and settle this. That's what is pretty annoying as well. Nobody in the Middle East believes that. And there was a time, maybe 30, 40, 50 years ago, especially, you know, after World War II and all, we had a much better, you know, reputation in the Middle East. But I don't think that's the case now. I don't think for a minute they see us as crusaders and people coming from a different culture and saying that you will do it our way or else. And then with the death and the destruction that has occurred, I cannot see any easy way for us to recover other than doing what we should have done a long time ago, and that it's time to come home.
Yeah. And you think, you know, it shouldn't be rocket science here. Just like our society, for all of the faults and complications that we have here in the U.S., if someone from outside came and decided to remake our society in a way that they thought would benefit us better, we would all resist it no matter what. It just seems common sense.
You know, and I think they are running out of funds that were allocated, I believe, for Syria. And those funds are about used up, but they haven't settled that that skirmish up there yet. But I guess the president doesn't sit around fretting about this. He's either going to get an emergency appropriation if he needs to, but he also has a slush fund.
Yeah, he does.
That he can do that. And couldn't they use that for Iraq as well?
$60 billion he'll have in the next year in his pocket to spend as he wishes, and Congress isn't about to challenge him. The strangest thing that I think about this whole Syria and Iraq is that there's really no sense of any U.S. strategy at all. It all boils down to a bumper sticker, we must defeat ISIS. But that is not satisfactory when you look at how complicated it is.
Well, there was even the debate among some of our leaders on whether Fallujah should be the city that we try to take back from ISIS. The others argue Mosul is I guess, more strategically. It's a bigger city, yeah, and more important. But that obviously is the giveaway that we're not in charge. You know, if that's what we thought might have been the best, somebody else made the decision why Fallujah is going to be the battle. But my prediction is, it's so bold, it's hard to believe, that the United States is not going to come out on the winning end of this, even if there's a temporary victory. There's always some temporary temporary victories, a mission accomplished, mm-hmm. that type of thing. But long term, it's unwinnable. And I lived through that. I was in the service during the Vietnam era, and there was always signs that we killed this many, and you know, it's a victory, victory. There was no sign ever that that there would be a total victory, and it's still going on. And now, of course, they're still working to have better relationships in. With the Vietnamese, but I think that if we look more at the areas where we talk a little bit, say with Iran, like we did with Iranians, talk a little bit with Cuba, and talk a little bit like we did with China, things move on. And I mentioned so many times when I was in office that just think how much more has been achieved in peace than it was in war when we were fighting and killing the Vietnamese. Far from perfect, but it's a lot better than just killing people and a lot of our people dying and spending a lot of money. So finally, the money is going to run out. People won't take it. We won't be able to print it and borrow it. And that will end all this. But I think more importantly, as we have to argue the case for the morality of our position and understanding that we have the moral high ground and that it's the best road to peace. But of course, we're challenging the people, they're not necessarily interested in peace. They're interested in control and power and political power, and they are interested in domination and mercantilism and all these other things. So that won't sell unless we sell it to the American people. If there's enough American people who will speak out, they will have an influence. But that it will be a job and a half. Right now, I'm not all that encouraged with what's going on in Washington, in the halls of Congress. I don't imagine there'll be too many debates going on right now about bringing troops home and quit this fight for Fallujah, the third fight for both Fallujah.
Yeah, and the only way things can resolve would be if the U.S. were to leave. So.
Yes. And, of course, we don't expect that to happen, but we can make the case for it. Eventually it will happen because that's the only thing that will bring about some peaceful settlement. But for now, we have to look at this and keep up with it and try to figure out who's doing what. But I think the factions, the confusion of the factions in Syria and Iraq are something that doesn't happen that often. Most of the time, a country fights another country, and they know who the enemy is, and they know what victory is. But nobody has the vaguest idea. We can declare victory again. We could take over Fallujah next week with our dictator or our person that we have in charge and declare victory. But it won't mean anything because the people there don't want occupiers just like you and I would not like occupiers of this country. And too bad we don't see it more in that light. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.